was pleasure, jerked back from despair by gambler's luck, not one of them earning their good fortune. But this little house clung to the old Puritan principles of hard work and thrift, just as the buildings clung to the quayside. So thought the man who stood before it, staring up at the windows as if he were hoping to catch a glimpse of someone inside. His brown suit was neat, the white lace at his collar and cuffs modest in these times of fashionable excess. His horse stood patiently behind him as he scanned the blank face of the warehouse, the pulley on the wall, and the wide-open double doors, and then turned to the murky river to watch the lumpers throwing heavy grain sacks, one to another, from the grounded flat-bottomed barge, grunting a monotone chant to keep the rhythm. The gentleman on the quayside felt as alien here as he did on his rare visits to court. It seemed as if there was no place for him at all in this New England. In the glittering, noisy palaces, he was a dowdy reminder of a difficult past, best clapped on the back with a quickly forgotten promise. But here on the quayside at Bermondsey, he stood out as a stranger, a rich idler among labouring men, a silent presence amid the constant scream from the pulley of the crane, the rumble of rolling barrels, the shouted orders, and the sweating lumpers. At court, he was in the way of a thoughtless round of pleasure. He was too drab for them. Here, he was in the way of the passage of work, where men were not individuals but moved as one, each one a cog, as if even work was not work any more, but had been atomized into a new, painful machine. He thought the world was not whole any more, but sundered into country and court, winners and the lost, Protestants and heretics, royalists and roundheads, the unfairly blessed and the unjustly damned. He felt very far from his own world of small luxuries taken for granted. Hot water in a china jug in the bedroom, clean clothes laid out for the day, servants to do everything. But he must enter this world of work if he were to make right the wrong he had done, bring a good woman to happiness, heal the wounds of his own failure. Like the king, he had come to make a restoration. He hitched his horse to a ring on a post, stepped to the edge of the wharf, and looked down into the flat-bottomed barge which was grounded heavily on the ramp beside the quay. "Where have you come from?" he called down to the man he took to be the master of the ship who was watching the unloading, ticking off the sacks in a ledger.
"Sealsea Island, Sussex,"
the man replied in the old, familiar, drawling accent.
"Best wheat in England, Sussex wheat."
He squinted upwards.
"You've come to buy? Or Sussex brewed ale, and salted fish. We've got that too."
"I'm not here to buy," the stranger replied, his heart thudding in his chest at the name of the island that had been his home. Her home.
"Nay, you'll be here for a dance in the ladies' great hall," the shipmaster joked, and one of the lumpers gave a crack of a laugh as the gentlemen turned away from their impertinence to look up at the warehouse again.
It was on the corner of a run of shabby three-story warehouses built of planks and old ship's timbers, the most prosperous of a poor row. Farther along the quay, where the River Neckinger joined the Thames in a swirl of filthy water, there was a gibbet, with a long-ago hanged man, a few tatters of cloth holding the bleached remaining bones. A pirate, whose punishment had been to hang and to be left to hang, as a warning to others. The gentleman shuddered. He could not imagine how the woman he had known could bear to live within earshot of the creak of the chain. He knew that she had no choice, and she had done the best she could with the wharf. Clearly the warehouse had been improved and rebuilt. Someone had gone to the expense and trouble to build a little turret at the downriver corner of the house, looking out over the Thames and the River Neckinger. She could step out of the glazed door and stand on